Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri, inviting you to discover what research, projects and events are taking place at the University of Malta. Very happy to have with me in the studio today for University Matters on Campus FM, Dr. Marceline Naudi. Dr. Naudi is Senior Lecturer and Head of Department of the newly constituted Department of Gender Studies within the Faculty for Social Wellbeing here at the University. Just say a few words about Dr. Naudi. She received her first degree from University of Malta back in 1980, her Master's degree in Women's Studies from University of Bradford, and her doctorate from Manchester University in 2004. A social worker by profession, her years of practice in England, Ireland and Malta has included work with children and young people in care and their families, ex-offenders, homeless people, persons with mental health support needs and survivors of domestic violence. Dr. Naudi contributes to teaching within several other university departments and faculties on gender issues and other anti-oppressive issues at both bachelor and master level. She's also active in the issues of women's rights and domestic violence, as well as wider equal opportunity issues. She represented Malta at the Council of Europe Ad Hoc Committee on Violence Against Women and Domestic Violence, which drafted the Istanbul Convention. In a voluntary capacity, she has acted as consultant to various agencies in the field of domestic violence and sits on the board of management of one of the local shelters. She also served as chairperson of the Commission on Domestic Violence from 2006 to 2010 and as a member of the chairperson of the Gender Issues Committee of the University for many years. Her current voluntary activity also includes supporting the Jesuit Refugee Service and the Malta Gay Rights Movement, as well as being a member of the Women's Study Group and the representative of the Malta Confederation of Women's Organization on the European Women's Lobby Observatory on Violence Against Women. Welcome to the programme, Dr. Naudi.
Thank you.
Well, today we're going to talk about two cost cooperation on in science and technology actions which you're involved with. This is a continuation of our mini-series that we're doing on the cost actions. And one is called Appearance Matters, Tackling the Physical and Psychosocial Consequences of Dissatisfaction with Appearance. And another, unfortunately, very topical issue, femicide across Europe. Perhaps we can start off with Appearance Matters. This is, as we said, it's topical, something that people are really becoming aware of now, but of course to be aware of something is not enough. Academics such as yourselves have to really look into the issue in a very deep and profound way by doing research on it. And this action is one of those ways of doing that research. Perhaps you could give us a bit of a background to what the action actually represents, what it's trying to do.
Yes. Appearance Matters. Now, I entered this particular cost project coming from one particular angle, one particular perspective, so to speak. As you rightly said in your introduction, I have always been very active in women's issues, and I have also always seen appearance as one of these issues. You say it's topical, sort of like recently topical or whatever. I tell you, it's been an issue for centuries. That is that, and there is this term called looksism, which is how I actually enter into this, looksism. And what looksism is about saying there is an ideal image that all people should conform to, and deviance from this ideal image results in disadvantage, basically. And I mean, you know, anybody out there should know what I'm talking about, okay? Especially in relation to women. So if you go back to, like, John Berger, woman is the looked at sex. Men are the lookers. women are the looked at sex, and women look at themselves being looked at. So women control, they try to discipline their own body because they see it being looked at. Do you see what I mean? And they try to conform as much to this ideal image. Now, there have been various sort of these women's magazines like Marie Claire, etc., who asked questions of hundreds of thousands of women, what depresses you most, what bothers you most, and always one of the top issues is their appearance, that they're too fat, they're too thin, they're too tall, they're too short, they're too large-breasted, too small-breasted, their nose is too big, their hair is too curly. It's, you know, we are constantly told through adverts, through society, that there is something wrong with us. There is something wrong with us. So I entered Appearance Matters from this perspective, from this angle. However, the COS project is much wider than that. It's much wider than that. It also includes, very importantly, the basis is still the same. The basis is still saying there is this ideal image that we should conform to. Now, I was talking about non-conforming to it because I'm too fat or because I'm too short or whatever, but there are some people who do not conform to it much more drastically, so to speak. And those are often people who are either victims of accidents like burns victims or motor vehicle incidents, people who are born maybe with, for example, cleft palate. These are people whose appearance does not fit the norm. So an important aspect of this cost project is precisely this. And in fact, one of the working groups is the medical healthcare group. And there are doctors included in this, of course, as well as nurses and other things. But, for example, we are hoping to encourage some of the medical staff in Malta to join, maybe plastic surgery, that sort of thing, to join this cost project. Because, as I say, it is wider than just the social cultural issues. One of the working groups is social and cultural, which is the working group which I am sitting on, because that is, as I say, my perspective. That's where I'm coming at it. And, of course, within that, as you, I'm sure, are aware, there are also cultural in terms of ethnic, different cultures, differences. There was a very good article. Of course, I can't remember the author, but hey, that's quite usual for
me.
Never
mind.
I think it's called The Western Woman's Harem. And it's written by a woman, an Arab woman, who is a scholar, who went to New York, I think, she went into a clothes shop, she wanted to buy a skirt or whatever, and she was treated with great disdain because she was like not a size 8 or 6 or whatever it is that we're supposed to be nowadays. And then she wrote this article and she said, like, you know, in her culture, there are various restrictions on women, various limitations that women have to endure and have to accept. But this is not one of them. And she says, in the West, there are these terrible restrictions on women in relation to their appearance. And she therefore equates it with harem as in bad thing, as in sin, as in, you know, which I find very interesting. So, yes, over the ages, over time, the ideal image has changed.
I'm going to say that nowadays, when we look at role models, and perhaps we'll talk about that, it hasn't always been like that. I mean,
no.
The Rubens women were...
Absolutely, I would have fitted so much better in that era. Yes, and I remember my grandmother telling me that one of the things that people would say when she was young was, I'm going to say it in Maltese, Ara che mi sabiha e savara. She's like a statue because she's so big.
You know,
big, yes. One. And two, timshi e sapapra, which was something good. She walks like a duck and she waddles, in other words, okay? And that being that she's so fat that she waddles. And that was seen as something...
positive?
Yes.
Really?
As something positive. Because extra weight was seen as good health. Huh? You are well nutritioned. So it was a sign of wealth, a sign of status, a sign of health. Mm-hmm. And therefore, and of course in those days, a woman's main role was to produce babies, and therefore she had to have a certain amount of health and, you know, and again, fertility. And of course, fatness has always been associated with fertility now, going back to the goddess. So that's really
good.
But yes, so over time, obviously, this ideal image has changed, and it has become thinner and thinner and thinner from Twiggy onwards. Then, you know, I mean, we thought Twiggy was thin, but I mean, compared to the models of nowadays, we know that the many of the models are airbrushed. The pictures that we actually get to see, There is an author called Jean Kilburn, who has done lots and lots on this and on the effect of the adverts on us as women, as men.
From what you're saying, I think that one can see that it's an extremely complex issue as well. I mean, we've touched on gender differences, cultural differences, also age differences, I imagine.
Absolutely, of course, because that image that we are all to emulate is actually a young image. And that is why, and women spend tremendous amounts of time, energy, money on things like creams, surgery even, to try to amend their looks and look younger.
What about the networks that you're involved with? This is, as I explain every time really, about cost. This isn't something that finances your research as such. What it finances is that ability to get in contact with other researchers.
Yes, and that's really really a good opportunity. It gives you more. I mean, there's annual meetings where everybody meets together, and then there are the various working groups. So, as I've already mentioned, I'm in the working group on social and cultural, but there are other working groups. There's a working group on educational setting. There's a working group on vocational setting, on public health, because, of course, this is a big public health issue, and on medical and healthcare. And, I mean, it would be really great if we had more people. There is another person from Malta involved in this cost action, and that's Dr. Brenda Murphy, who's also a member of the, an academic member of the Department of Gender Studies. But it would be great if we had other people who would be approaching it from those different angles. One, because they can meet other people who are working on similar things, who are concerned about similar issues. And you always learn. You always get ideas. You always, you know, it's like a bubbling cauldron, you know. It starts off with just one, and then you go ooh 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 ooh, and it's sort of like popping all the time. I think I find it very, very stimulating to be in that sort of situation. But then there's also the short-term scientific missions, the STSMs. So the STSMs would cover, for example, a young surgeon, a young plastic surgeon from Malta, for example, to go to Bristol for a week, where they're doing a lot of research on cleft palate, for example, and learn from them. So those are also, again, great opportunities. They're there for the taking. It's a great pity if we don't, if in Malta we don't sort of like make the most of these opportunities.
How long has the action been going, and how long?
It's just approaching the end of its first year.
Oh, so we're still early.
Yes,
days.
And it's 4 years, so. There's another 3 years to go.
We mentioned women, obviously, as being perhaps the main targets or victims, if one puts it that way, of these attitudes towards women. Men also have that problem as well, and perhaps, I don't know, boys who are looking for figures that resemble, I don't know, Greek athletes or something, I suppose they would also find themselves in difficulties.
Yes. First of all, of course, the social and cultural element apart, in terms of burns victims, etc., of course, they can be of either gender. I mean, that's obviously the thing. In terms of appearances, in terms of culture, in the old days, I think there was quite a lot of emphasis on the Greek, you know, physique.
The canon.
Canon. You know, and whatever. And there used to be those adverts of someone throwing sand in the face, and, you know, do you remember them? I think that nowadays the role models for men have changed. I don't think that there are so many bodybuilder type role models, but they are, you know, role models have changed quite substantially. However, this is something which I feel quite sad about. I'm saddened by it, that this is one of the issues where men were not previously affected, hardly, but now they're jumping in. Instead of sort of realizing the damage that is being done, they're actually joining in and allowing themselves to be equally damaged. So, I mean, we never had before men who would wax their chests or their backs, for example. But now it's something quite normal. It's like almost expected. It's not considered, you know, it's
strange.
Yes.
Commonplace.
So, you know, even men now are
getting tied to these models.
Yes, yes. And we have creams, you know, for men, aging, you know, creams, not aging, obviously, non-aging. You know, creams and things for men, which, so yes, I mean, they are being drawn in more and more.
The other thing that interested me as I was doing a little bit of reading, obviously a little bit of reading around the subject, was the idea of how do you, when you do your surveys, how do you test people to see whether they're being affected or not by these problems?
Well, to start with, I don't think we would ever test to see if they are being affected, because everybody is being affected. And again, if people look at some of Jean Kilburn's work, there are various YouTubes. If someone wants to Google Jean Kilburn and "Killing Us Softly," she's come out with, I think she's on number 4 or 5 now, I can't remember, videos over the years on this whole issue. And one of the things that she says, in fact, is that, you know, sometimes people tell her, I don't pay any attention to adverts. And she says, that's rubbish. You know, we are constantly bombarded by adverts, and we are constantly absorbing the messages.
Subliminally, we don't even notice.
Exactly.
Today I'm joined in the University Matters studio at Campus FM by Dr. Marceline Naudi to talk about 2 cost action projects in which she is involved. One is Appearance Matters, and the other concerns femicide. I'm going to pass on now to the other cost action which you're involved in, because I want to give it some importance, because it really is an important issue, a tragic issue really, and that's the femicide across Europe.
Yes, this is, violence against women is one of the areas that I have been very involved in for very many years. And of course, femicide is the ultimate violence against women, when women are actually killed as a result of violence against them. Femicide, there is sometimes, there are different definitions of what is meant by femicide. Some people just take it to mean murders of women, you know, specifically women as opposed to men or children or whatever. But the meaning that we are working with is the killing of women because they are women. So victims of domestic violence, and I mean most femicides actually occur within a relationship. So although we are taught to fear the stranger in the dark alley, you know, and watch out, somebody will jump out at you from behind a hedge or whatever, the reality is that we are very, very much more in danger in our own homes than we are outside. I mean, you know, research has shown time and again, the vast majority of women being murdered occur within a relationship, not by a stranger in a dark alley. So it's the killing of women because they are women. That would include, as we said, domestic violence. There's even if the stranger in the dark alley might, if it was a stranger rape, for example. Although again, I mean, most rapes actually occur not by strangers, but by acquaintances or friends or family members or husbands, partners, whatever. But again, even a woman who was raped by a stranger, she was raped because she was a woman. And if she dies as a result of her injuries, then that is also considered femicide. There are various discussions on what exactly, you know, I mean. For example, as you may recall, some years ago we had an elderly woman whose bag was snatched, and because she tried to hold on to the bag, she fell and she hit her head and she died. I would say that the chances are that she was targeted because she was a woman.
Mm. Fragile.
Yes, considered elderly, of course, but a woman, considered more thing. Plus, I have to say, we are taught to carry handbags. Men don't carry handbags. Men put things in their pockets. And a handbag is much more snatchable in this sort of scenario. I would say that is a femicide, that particular example. It's very sad, as you said, but it's very true, and it's a reality, and it's something which, although there has been a heightened awareness over the past couple of years, maybe, it's something which has been ongoing again from time immemorial. Mm-hmm. Women have been killed because they are women. Although there has been quite a lot of research done in Europe on violence against women generally, there hasn't been much done on femicide. So part of the idea of this cost action is to bring together researchers who are concerned about the issue or who have already done some research or are in the process of doing research, bringing them together to be able to discuss and to be able to try to get some sort of comparative data across Europe.
Also, one of the things that has come out from other interviews that I've done with other academics, one of the aims would be precisely to define, in this case, femicide, because there are various ways of looking at things, and where there hasn't been united research, then people might define it in different ways, or perhaps choose to ignore maybe a part of the equation for one reason or another. So I would imagine that the networking possibilities are going to bring a certain standardization into how you look at femicide in general.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the working groups on this project is precisely on definitions, because we realize that it is so important, and that if, you know, Marceline is doing research in Malta on femicide and Anna's doing research in Italy on femicide, but if we're defining it differently, then you know, we cannot even compare in any way the results of our research. So one of the working groups is precisely on definition. Another working group is on data collection, and that is the working group that is, I'm just back in fact from a working group meeting which was held in Nuremberg, and one of the aims of that working group is to try to come up with data collection on femicide also, obviously, but also with various variables which are comparable across Europe, so that data is kept. So when there's a murder, you know, the data is kept about the perpetrator, the person who murdered, the relationship between them, you know, and various other, the age, obviously, various other, which are data which is collected, which would be collected automatically, so then we can compare. For example, one of the things which was quite interesting is from the data that was compared in this working group is that women most at risk are sort of aged from about late 20s to late 40s, 50. There are more women killed in that age group than there are younger women.
Did they come up with an explanation for that?
No, but it was a pattern which came out in various countries, not just in one country. But another interesting thing which came out, which is sort of relatively new, is that there has been an increase in elderly women being killed, sort of 80-odd. That sort of age range, and that this was not so visible before, but now it is becoming more visible. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, it's interesting to see these things, obviously, and then to analyse and to work out and to see. And, of course, the reason isn't just to carry out research. Oh, hey, what will I do today? Oh, I know I'll do a bit of research. The aim is, obviously, prevention, to stop femicides, to be able to study, research, analyse, so that we can then inform policy in Europe and hopefully decrease things like this. Yes,
we discussed about the other action, the cultural and ethnic differences. Here we'll have another example of definitely cultural differences and ethnic differences, and things that would have gone on in a different country before, now, for example, UK or any of the European countries where there's a certain amount of migration, certain attitudes would be perhaps different to the local attitudes, are coming to the fore. I mean, honour killings being perhaps one of them.
Yes.
I mean, when they happened in Afghanistan, nobody knew about them or wherever. Or
Nobody cared about them, I would say.
But now if they're happening in outer London or in Bradford, then obviously people are objecting to that. And I think this must be a very difficult aspect of it to grasp.
In fact, again, one of the working groups is precisely on culture, on ethnicity and femicide, and it will be looking into these things as well. There was a bit of a debate in this work group that I was just at on whether it is killing of women by men because they are women or just killing of women because they are women. And there are examples of, for example, in honor killings of mothers killing their own daughters because they have dishonored the family. Mother often under pressure, of course, from the men in the family. But still, we also have examples of women who kill women because they are women, because they have dishonored the family, because women's honor resides in the family, etc.
Within the laws of countries of origin, that would probably have been, if not accepted, tolerated.
I think more and more countries, more and more countries have laws against it. However, for example, we have laws in Malta about litter, do we not? But our culture is still that we litter, that we throw things out of the windows
of cars.
Keep
our own houses very clean.
Yes. So, I mean, although there are laws, the more sort of basic, more fundamental norms within the society take longer to change. So,
in the few seconds that we have remaining, you were saying that you'd be interested to hear from people who might be interested in participating in these actions. How would they contact you?
Absolutely. They can contact me by email, which is probably the best way. So they can either do that through the university webpage, or basically it's marceline.naudi@um.edu.mt, to be clear. But I would be very interested, because I keep saying, you know, we have opportunities here. We have opportunities for people from Malta to travel, to meet other people who are interested in the same things. And I'll tell you again, that sort of popping, that brain popping, stimulating experience, I think is great. And I would encourage many people to try to get that popping brain experience.
Well, that's lovely. Thank you so much for being with us on University Matters on Campus FM today, Dr. Marceline Naudi, to talk about the cost actions that you're involved with. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to University Matters on Campus FM. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-programm li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.